Misty both have COVID, so I'm your substitute teacher tonight. My name is Chad. I feel like I need to write it on the board. And I know Newton was diagnosed today with COVID as well. And Barry wasn't tested, but Barry is really under the weather. She called me yesterday and asked me to go over to the house to check on him because he didn't answer his phone. So that was a little awkward. So she gave me the code to the house and the garage, and I knocked, "Hello, Barry." Very strange. So I went in the house and I searched and opened up one door, and there he was, just laying in bed. You know, I thought, yesterday's my birthday. I'm not going to find the evangelist dead on my birthday. That's the first thing I thought. I'm honest. And two, he probably thought I was the angel Gabriel coming in to say, "Hey, you guys are going to have a child. His name is John." I don't know. I shouldn't make light of that. But he's 300% better today. He just texted. He's doing a lot better. But we had a little scare about him yesterday. But you know how he is. He's stubborn and workaholic. And I told him even Jesus rested. So we're in Judges chapter 2 tonight. So I prayed all day today that this class would be productive. I prepared it to be that way and encouraging, uplifting to us. There's a lot of depressing things that we're going to look at here tonight in Joshua 2, but there's also some very positive things and lessons I hope that we learn. That's why we are studying this, hopefully to learn from history. Somebody said once, the only thing we learn from history is we do not learn from history. A lot of truth to that. Especially here in Judges. So Judges chapter 2, we're not going to read verse by verse. You know, it's a very different book than Joshua, you know, that we just concluded. Joshua's a book of victory and triumph and success and claiming the promised land. And then we have Judges here that shows the failure of Israel to conquer their enemies. They didn't claim their inheritance. The sin that they had in their lives had a tremendous, huge effect upon their lives as well as their relationship with God. So very, very different books here, as we see. But and I want to start with verse 10. That verse just really, really just shouts to me in verse 10. Everything was good, it seems like, and they were faithful, they were dedicated, they were worshiping God. And then we have verse 10 of Judges 2, "And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done." I pause and I think for a moment. You know, everything was going great. God gave them the victory. God was the leader, is the leader. And then it says in Judges 2 that there arose a generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that God had done for Israel. It's hard for me to imagine that they don't know about the Red Sea or how God protected them for the 40 years and gave them the land. It's just a whole generation. So I think we see a cycle here, and I always have a title for a lesson. I like to title it "Breaking the Cycle of Sin." Breaking the Cycle of Sin. So we see in Judges, as Patrick alluded to last week, that Israel falls into idolatry, then Israel's enslaved, then Israel cries out to the Lord, then God raises up a judge, and Israel's delivered, and Israel finally serves the Lord. And then that we're going to see tonight, when that judge or deliverer passes away, then they fall back into that cycle of going and living against God. So, you know, we can look at all this whole book, which we're going to the next few weeks. We see Ehud and Deborah and Gideon and Jephthah and Samson and all these that were judges. They weren't actually judges. Only God's the judge. But they're more military leaders, it seemed like to me, or deliverers. That God used someone to help bring his people back to him. So I just wanted to start by asking a question tonight. Why was there a cycle of sin during the time of the judge? What's the reason, do you think, was the cycle of sin? And we see that all through the book, all through the book. They were close to God. They repented. They were close to God. They repented. It's just a vicious, vicious cycle of sin. And we're going to apply this to us today. It's easy for us to look at these people and say, hey, well, they got a major problem. What is the major vicious cycle that they were in? But we need to be careful too today. We'll talk about that in a few moments. So the question is, before us all, why was there a cycle of sin during the time of the judges, do you feel? I think there's some specific reasons. Yes, sir.
I think a big part of it was the fact that they didn't drive all the people out like they were told to.
Well, disobedience. They didn't do what God told them to do. And God told them to drive them out for a reason, wasn't it? That they wouldn't be drawn away into idols, which they were, drawn away in the, you know, the division of the land. I mean, it's just a mess that they created for themselves that wasn't necessary at all. But we're that way too, aren't we? Yes, sir.
So many things have said, teach your children, teach your children, teach your children. And even the monuments that they arose in the middle of the river, and when they get on the other side, they have an altar, and the one that they put up that was white and they could see from a long way, it was some of their children that asked, what's this about? They quit telling their children of God's blessing.
Well, one of the notes I had in my notes tonight was one reason is, I think, because of the lack of leadership. There was no leadership. Everything Joshua, you know, who among them at this point could say, hey, for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. That was Joshua. That's a leader. That's determination and vision and momentum and attitude. That's all those things. Where's the Joshuas? Here. So I think a lack of leadership is very, very important. No one to remind them. We need to be reminded. I got news for you. If you don't know that, we need to be reminded of who we are and who we serve and why we serve. We're here tonight to edify and to encourage each other by study of God's word, to simply remind us of what's important, why we're here, et cetera, et cetera. What else do you think there was a cycle of sin? And if I had a graph, I wish I had one. That shows up and down, up and down. Yes.
I think at this stage, too, they finally accomplished and gotten the good things. And as we do sometimes in life, when things are going well, or we finally have something, then we get complacent and don't lean on God as much when we're in need, as we see it.
So their passions were turned toward the material. Let me ask this question. How can God's people follow various gods that was been created? I'm looking. We have the purview here of looking at all this, and you see what God has done for them, how God has blessed them, how God wants to have a relationship with them, and we're going to see here in a few moments that that's going to continue because God rose up deliverers or judges. That's one of the most positive things in this chapter I see. Even though God was angry, there's consequences. The whole generation is said that had left God. Look at verse 11. And the people did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served Baals. I mean, they abandoned God, the God of their fathers who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples. There you go, Brother Hooten, that surrounded them and bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. I've never seen anybody bow down to anything else. Have you? Yeah, I do. Yeah. What have you bowed down to? You see how we need to make this practical? This is not just a reading of a chapter. We need to make this practical to us today. We need to be so cautious and careful and listen to God's word and to stay in the word, or we're going to forget too. We're going to have a generation that's not going to know what's right, what's wrong, what's truth, what's false, what's authority, what's not authority. On and on we could go. And it's up to us to make sure, all of us are leaders, especially we need leaders today that stands up and says, this is what God says, and not to be afraid of it.
I don't know if this answers your question, but I saw in Joshua that the Lord told Israel that they weren't going to be able to drive everybody out overnight. It was going to be gradual. Slowly but surely they would drive the inhabitants out. And they didn't do that, but what they did do was slowly become just like them. And kind of like what you're saying, it's our little decisions every day.
Every day.
And how does God's people bow to Baal? It's gradual.
Yeah.
Happens over time.
I have never in my life, I'm 60 years old yesterday, I've never in my life, all the years in the church, I was raised by a Lois and a Eunice. I've never in my life seen anybody raise their hand, hey, Chad, I'm going to become unfaithful today. I've never seen that. But I've seen people become unfaithful to God, and their enthusiasm for God dwindles, and their passion goes away because it's usually tied to, one, not being together as the spiritual support group as we are, and two, it's usually a passion or something that they put above God. They get more excited about a big house or a car or whatever God you want to put before God. And this book tells us, I mean, God was he just mad? The anger of the Lord was kindled against them. God was hurt. I want you to know tonight, remind ourselves, there's consequences to sin. And we see that here. Yes, sir.
That's the reason it's so important for us, especially as parents or grandparents. When the doors are open, we need to be here. Because our children and grandchildren will look at us, and it will help if they see us being the kind of example we ought to be.
That's exactly right. I think we always need to be conscious of our actions and our speech, not just to our kids and grandkids, but to all of each of us and to everyone we are. So, any other thoughts of why the cycle of sin? We could look at so many passages in the New Testament about this. I think it was a lack of leadership, no one to remind them, and two, I think it was a tendency to simply forget God, and three, I think it was a problem of a lack of obedience to God. A whole generation, that just blows my mind. A whole generation don't know anything about God. They're serving these stones, they're serving these man-made, whatever you want to call them, to bow down to them. That would upset me too if I was God, after all the grace that I've displayed and has shown. Anything else? Let's look at the next here, not to go by verse, but look, that's one of the greatest verses, I think, in this chapter is verse 16. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. four verses before, we just see that God's anger toward them is kindled toward them. Angry, upset, wanting to, just like probably the day of Noah that wanted to just destroy everybody. He repented that he made man. You know, God gets upset. And then we have grace, I call it, verse 16. Grace again, and no matter what we do, no matter what, if a generation has forgotten God, no, you just fill in the blanks tonight, you can see clearly that God wants a relationship with us. The Lord raised up judges, verse 16.
You wonder why he stood with them as long as he did, as many times.
I'm glad God stays with us.
But
I'm glad.
It just shows how everlasting and powerful God's love is.
That's right. You know, all my life I thought, well, judges are judges. These aren't judging. It's only person that judges is God. But again, God rose up men and women, Deborah and women, to that's a very important point, to help them, to bring them back. But I think the absence of leadership is very critical here. That's why the generation was wondering. I think that's why they weren't reminded. Oh, I don't want to repeat myself over and over. But I think the leadership here, the lack of it, it was a tremendous problem. And it is today, too. Even in the church, it is. We moved to Nashville several years ago, and we went to a congregation. I thought, well, I've never seen a woman lead a prayer. I've never seen, this. And we're going around, and it just, people just get off on so many things, just like they did here. How can a generation forget God? How can we forget God? We've got to teach it. Everything we do here, every dollar we spend is teaching the laws, teaching us, reminding us. Don't forget. Don't fall in this trap. There's no winners if you go down this path. And how many times do we see in the history of Israel, of all the pain and the suffering and the physical pain and the loss of life, the divided country, I can just go on and on, we can, of all the things that sin had done. And all they had to do was what? Just do what God says. Appreciate His grace. He wants a relationship with us. Kyle, I'm talking way too much. Comments, questions? Anybody who had their hand up? Yes, sir.
We know that certain groups of people were condemned that got them into captivity later on, and one of them was priests. They're the ones that are supposed to be doing this. God spread them throughout the country. They didn't have an excuse saying, well, that guy lived out in the country, I couldn't talk to him. They were all over. So, it condemned not only the leaders, but I consider them, the priests, to be the religious leaders, and they failed.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Of course, in verse 16, if we read on, I still think that's a positive grace showing verse in verse 16. But if you go on in verse 17, you're going to see what's the problem again? Somebody tell me. Here we go again. Even though God brings people up to help them come back, to remind them of their relationship, their covenant that God has made with them, what happens in verse 17? That's real. So they just didn't listen. Or if you look at the whole book of Judges, you'll see that they did listen to some, but when those people, Deborah, all these people that all these judges and deliverers, I call them as well, when they died, what happened? What happened when they died? And then they go back to, so their faith, a lot of their faith we'll see in Judges was placed upon the judge. Are the deliverer. It wasn't based upon God. It was based upon, a person. And we gotta remember today, this isn't our church. This is Christ's church. He's the head of the church. Yes, I get way off on that one.
It shows you that their obedience was not really from their heart. You know what I mean? Like, when people are thrown back and forth by just the circumstances of life, like when things are good, I'm okay with God, but when things get bad, it's His fault that they're bad, and I'm going to turn and do my own thing. That's kind of what I feel like the cycle is here. Is that however my circumstances are, that's how I will appreciate God. Whereas true, like, heartfelt obedience is, no matter the circumstance, like, that's God has given me everything.
That's a great point. That's a really good point. In verse 19, look at verse 19, what we just said. Whenever the judge died, they what? They turned back and were what? Did I read this wrong? They were what?
More corrupt
than their fathers, going after other gods, serving them and bowing down to them. They didn't drop any of their practices, or their stubborn, that's a word, ways. Maybe they had too much pride in themselves. We could do that too. We ain't careful. Maybe they thought they knew more than God. It tells us Satan is alive. I mean, read Judges. I mean, Satan is really alive and not wanting us to have relationships with God. And he'd throw anything and anyone and anything he can think of to separate us from a relationship with God. This is just very sad to me. And it was to God. But again, please see the grace here that God is bestowing. Yes, sir.
We've said a few times that the issue is that they didn't have leaders. I might kind of present a counter idea to that, which is we see in the verse you just referenced, but really, you know, 16 through 20 or 21, when they had a really strong leader, they followed God. But when they didn't have a strong leader, they went back to serving whatever they wanted to serve. And I would present the idea that perhaps the issue is that their baseline reaction or baseline position was that they were going to serve other gods. If there was a strong enough voice, a strong enough arm, like literally someone who is powerful, to lead them, they would follow God because there was that strength, that single voice leading them to God. But whenever that disappeared, they went back to their baseline, and their baseline was serving other gods. And so I just wonder if maybe perhaps instead of framing this as they had a leadership problem, it's actually that they had a baseline commitment problem.
Well, they had a heart problem, definitely.
And every now and then definitely. There'd be a leader that would come and have the strength to force them all to serve God.
Right.
And if we're going to compare something to our life that we can learn from, it may be that we need to make certain that we are not leading people to serve God simply because we have a force of will to do that.
Right.
And I specifically as a father think about that with my children, making certain that my children or those that I have a lot of influence over, they don't serve God just because they know Adam's a strong voice and I'll encourage them to do that in ways that are very forceful. But instead I teach them that their baseline should be service to the Lord.
But it helps you're a good leader.
One day I won't be here. One day Chad won't be here.
Right.
One day Danny won't be here.
That's right.
And so we need this congregation and our children and those we love who worship the Lord, that their baseline reaction is to worship the Lord. And it's not because any individual
That's right.
or group of men
That's
leads
right.
them to do that.
I never clap in church before. I think it's great. I think what you said is wonderful. Now, does it help to have a strong leader in the family? Definitely. Definitely helps. Does it help to have good, godly leaders in a church or a business? You know, I could tell you a lot of businesses that are thriving because of the leadership, because they're the Nehemiahs. Let us build. They're not directing people, telling them what to do. They're doing it with them. That's leadership. So, your point's well taken. When I was raised in the church, I was always told what I could not do. You can't do this. You know, you can't do this. I told you before, no mixed women, no proms. We didn't play many games, except they played Rook. I don't know why. Rook. I couldn't go to square dance in third grade. Isn't that terrible? I think I'm a good dancer. I'll never know. So, because we can't square dance, I wrote a note. So all those things, but I did things because I was told I can't do it. But later in life, I realized, well, this there's a reasoning behind a lot of this, and I grew my own faith, my faith, your faith, my faith in God, and I do the things because I love God. I know His ways are right. I've been proven in my life. It's been proven through history. We can look over it like we're doing tonight. I just know doing it God's way is the best way. And I love God. Barry and I was talking last week. You know, we don't pay Barry or Patrick to be a Christian. We don't. You know, you can't pay me to be a Christian. I'm a Christian because of my love and my response to the cross of Jesus. He's the one. Talk about this vicious cycle of sin. The main point tonight is the only person that can break that, his name is Jesus. Only one. Only one that can do that. But until he came, until he gave that blow to Satan that he won't recover from, we had judges and deliverers and kings. You know, how'd that work out for them? I mean, you know, we always get to that tendency of thinking in human form, it's human ways. We got to do this because everybody else has. We got to do this, and I got to have this and this. But Adam, your point is so well taken. We do things, and they were their passions were just so misdirected, and the consequences were so heavy for them. How many people can we talk about tonight, including ourselves? If we had a chance, every one of us come up here and say, you know, this is my story. I mean, all of us would say, wow, you know, that person, you know, he isn't perfect either. Wow, I get strength from that. Not that you're a failure, but that you understand that you have struggles too in life. All of us do. Yes, sir.
Building off of Adam's point about seeing that picture of who God is and understanding that bigger context and that inspiring a love for God rather than just, right, let me try to follow the rules and the commandments, you see this picture of God's character, specifically God's character as the deliverer for his people, when it says that he was the one who would save them from the hand of their enemies. But I think it's particularly worth noting verse 18, for the Lord was moved to pity by the groaning of his people because of those who afflicted and oppressed them. So like, even though the people keep missing the point and turning back, you see God still has pity on them, and he's still sending judges out of compassion to try and win them back. And it's almost like if you could convince the people to see that side of God, that he's still seeking you while you're turning away and he's showing pity on you, then the people would be maybe more receptive to turn their hearts to him. And not to read too much into the text, but the second half of verse 17 says that the people soon turned aside from the way in which their fathers walked, and it describes that by who had obeyed the commandments of the Lord. Yeah. And like, the point there is that the fathers were obedient and the children weren't. But if the fathers only ever walked in that way and were obedient and didn't teach their children that you should love God and be obedient because he's this father who has pity on you and who seeks you out, then it's only ever going to produce that like surface level obedience.
That's exactly right. That's what I told you, my little brief story of, you know, I'm grateful for my upbringing and the strictness. I couldn't wear shorts. I mean, think about it. My grandmother roll over in her grave today if I wore a short. She'd roll over in her grave today if I didn't wear a tie tonight. But I realize, you know, some things are tradition, some things are, but at the end of the day, this is my faith, and I'm responding to that. It's about the cross, isn't it? It's the cross. It's the grace. It's the love. It's the forgiveness. And I had that in my notes, too, tonight about, you know, when God moved by pity, he pitied them. What do you think that means, pity them? I think grace. Felt sorry for them. Even though they were worshiping stones, even though they spit in his face, that's what they did. That's what they were doing. That's what we do too. We claim to be disciples. Are we disciples? Are we just a convenient disciple or a fly-by-night disciple? Or if somebody says boo to you, well, I'm going to somewhere else. Or I had a guy once years ago. He was an evangelist, retired. He said, Chad, I said, I am so upset with you. I said, why? He said, you didn't say good morning. And he was really upset about that. I said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean not to greet you today, but he was upset about that. I had a guy call me 3-4 weeks ago, an elder where I served, great relationship. And he said, Chad, he had a heart attack and a stroke, and he could barely talk on the phone. His wife said, he wants to talk to you. He said, I want you to know that if I've done anything to ever upset you or offend you, I'm sorry. That's a deathbed confession. I got news for you. We're all dying. We are. There are three lessons I had for this lesson. The effects of consequences of sin is long-lasting. Long-lasting. Look at 2 verse 19 we just read. And second, our lives are very short. Look at 18 and 19, verses 18 and 19. I thought, you know, it's just so short our life is. And three, only Jesus can break this cycle. Only Jesus. For somebody, I'd like to talk for 1 second of how life is short. It is short. Brother Hooten told me tonight he's going to be 90 years old. When is it?
In June.
Oh, great man. I told him you're going to live to be 100. He don't want to live to be 100. I said, that's not up to you. It's not you. 90 years old. You never know it.
You know, relationships. God was so adamant about them not intermarrying. And yet what did they do?
They did the opposite. They did.
So it's so important for our young people to marry Christians.
I wasn't allowed to date anybody unless they were Christians. I mean, that's the rule of my house. It was. And there's a reason for that, isn't there? There's a reason for that. You know, you just see all these things that went awry from all of God's people and the problems. You know, Solomon that had, what, 300 concubines? You know, for years I thought those were John Deere tractors. Seriously, all my life growing up. I mean, he had all these women. What? Where did God say you can have? Where does God stop it? Where does God say that you can have all these different wives? Where does God die? God didn't endorse David having all those wives either. I mean, so we've got to get back. I know this sounds cliche, to the basics. We've got to get back to teaching the truth. And the big picture of the Bible, God wanting a relationship with us, let's just do it God's way. It's a lot simpler. Just follow the directions. How's that? Yes, sir.
That's why Jesus was so brutal in his language. Sermon on the Mount, but like, hey, if your arm's causing you to sin, like, just chop it off. Like, get it, whatever it takes, however painful it's going to be, get rid of it.
It's better to enter heaven with one arm, then to hell with that. That's what he said. That's exactly right. So it's we're talking priorities. We're talking lessons here of history they're not learning. We're talking about their hearts. That's what we're talking about here tonight, their hearts. And we need to be careful of our hearts. We need to be careful with our attitudes. We need to be careful with our commitments to each other, which we have as a God's family, to love each other, forgive each other. Some of the most frustrating moments I've had this past year, I get upset with somebody else of how they're, what they're doing or not doing. And I think, well, Chad, you know, you need, let, my wife's wonderful. She, I married up 39 years this coming, this year, 39, we got there. She said, Chad, you know, you have problems too. I said, you're right. You have faults too. You know, you need grace. You need to extend grace. You need to forgive Chad because, you know, God's forgiven you. And it comes down to that, doesn't it? I don't mean to be preachy tonight, but the effects of sin is long-lasting. Our lives are so short. We see that here. And I'm telling you, Ephesians chapter 1, 19 through 23 is a good passage. I wish we had time to read it tonight, but maybe we do. Look, real quick, just one passage, Ephesians 1, talking about how we can truly break the bad habits or the addiction to sin or being slaves to sin. Somebody read that for me, if you would. Ephesians 1, 19 through 23. And listen to what Paul is writing to the church at Ephesus, how powerful that is. It's really the gospel preached. Ephesians 1, 19 through 23. Somebody read that for us, if you would. Not all at once.
And what is the immeasurable greatness of his power toward us who believe? According to the working of his great might, that he worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the one to come. And he put all things under his feet and gave him as head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all.
What habit, what addiction that Christ can't help you with. You know, talked to a gentleman this past week. He said, you know, our congregation has about 14 people. We're just dying on the vine. I said, whose fault is that? You know, we give excuses. God doesn't do excuses. Read Judges. God doesn't do excuses. Well, you know, a month or so ago, I talked to a good friend in Michigan. He said, you know, Chad, I think we're losing this generation. I said, no. And I mentioned a lot of the young families we have here. I said, no. I said, we just stopped preaching the truth. People don't want to hear the truth, he said. I said, yes, they do. More than ever, I think we have opportunities today to teach and to preach the death and burial and resurrection of Jesus. That's your solution. That's your financial solution. That's your all these solutions. Name a problem in life. It's the cross. It's Jesus. Comments, questions. I had only a few hours to prepare for class. I hope that you were encouraged and uplifted by, yes, ma'am. Then we go here.
Verse 22 is very interesting to me because he says, this is the Lord speaking, I did this to test Israel and see whether or not they would keep the Lord's way by walking in as their father's hand. I think frequently we don't see the issue. We don't see it. When we fail, we don't realize that we're being tested. And I think many times we were being tested. We don't like to think we may fail over and over and over. They failed over and over and over. Sometimes we may do the same thing. But I think just focusing on the fact that it is a test, that helps me. You know, you can kind of gear up if you think it's for a purpose.
That's a great point.
Pull yourself together and think, okay, the Lord will help me through this one. Because it's, you know.
But where we have a hard time, could I add, is when we try to solve these things by ourselves, and where we have the difficult time is that we're harder on ourselves than what God is sometimes. So the goal is to see ourselves the way God sees us. And they need to see that too. Unfortunately, there was a lot of people that didn't do that because, as Adam says, the baseline wasn't there, their faith. Yes?
Yeah. It's not just, oh, well, you fail that. That's not what it's for. It's there to teach us things.
Definitely.
And a lot of times we learn things from our failures that we don't learn from our successes. And fact that, you know, some of these judges, this was over a period of time. This wasn't just like
350-some years, I believe.
Yeah. It wasn't
about 350
just like
years.
That kept one person or one little group that kept failing over. Now, they were passing down failure.
Right.
So there are reasons for that, and that just...
Passing down failure.
Yeah.
That's sad. They don't say, yes, sir.
I think also we have to look at the sin itself that's predominantly being talked about is idolatry. And you're diminishing the character and the image of God into something that's created. And that's what they're kind of trying to follow, something that's created and not the person who created it. And so when you diminish the image of God to something that's created, then how would God be powerful to you? And so to the nations that were conquering them, they realized, hey, you know what? Your God is not as powerful as you say he is. And by them just following these idols, it just kind of proved that, you know what? We're just going to follow this other way. And the character of God was just defamed. You know, it was kind of trashed. And it's very sad to see that part of it, because the predominant sin was idolatry that brought them to this point.
That's right. You know, God is a father, of course. I look at him as he's our father. And as a father, you know, you get disappointed in your kids, you know, and maybe your expectations maybe aren't realistic sometimes. But they have to, and the hardest thing as a parent, and those of you that are parents, I know understand this, is to see your children do what? I don't like to use that word fail. That's not in my vocabulary much. But to see them make decisions that affects them, not so much physically, but spiritually. It's that prodigal son, the prodigal sons or daughters. It's the people that make choices. And I just got to remember as a father, well, Chad, you're not perfect either. and you've got to be patient and kind and all these things that are characteristics of God. The prodigal son's a good one, that father. Waiting.
One of the things that we can take out of this and the rest of what this leads up to in Samuel and, mm-hmm. and give me a king and all that stuff, is that even though they worshiped other gods, they gave their children and burned them to other gods, they did all these horrendous things, and God was always willing
called a God of second chance.
Right. He always is willing
God of second chance.
To take us back. So
I'm grateful for that.
The point here is that we all fail, but that doesn't mean we have to stay in a failure situation.
Our failure should not define us.
That's right. We should be able to get up, recognize
grace
what we've done, ask God for forgiveness, and go ahead.
That's right.
Because God's willing to. Yeah, but we need to be able to do that.
That's exactly right. Yes, sir.
It's amazing to see how what some of the prophets that are there kind of brought my mind to this, how much God allows his name to be dragged through the mud over these 350 years where they just get, you know, they're this amazing nation that comes out of nowhere and crosses the Jordan River and they wipe out Jericho, they wipe out Ai, all this these amazing victories, and then Joshua dies and it's like,
what happened?
Yeah, it goes to trash. And
yes.
It's amazing to me to think about God allowing, so that the people will learn lessons, he allows his own name to be trashed as they lose and lose and lose again and get less and less powerful.
But there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
God loves us.
Yeah, for sure.
that's so painful to God. The sin is called whoring after other gods.
Whoring.
And that alludes to adultery. And in that exact scenario, if you're the party in adultery that's been cheated on, it maybe is a natural reaction to say, never be around that person again, never talk to that person again, do everything you have to do to separate yourself. But to Belinda's point of testing them and of letting your name be dragged through the mud, God says, I want your heart. I want you to choose me. I don't just want you to not do this anymore. I want you to choose me.
Not a force.
So I'm not going to completely remove you from these other nations because I'm willing to endure hurt and I'm willing to endure you choosing the wrong people because I want your heart and I want you to choose me.
That's exactly right.
And that's just mind-boggling.
I can't comprehend it. Yes, sir.
I think as you talk about the overview here, and Danny kind of alluded to this, of how the end of Judges and 1 Samuel overlap.
Right.
I think it's really important to consider 1 Samuel opens with things have gotten so terrible. The book of Judges ends with everybody does just what's right in the sight of their own eyes. And then 1 Samuel opens after the story about Hannah and Samuel with, and Eli's sons, who should be the folks who are going to pick up the mantle and become the high priest, are taking advantage of the women outside of the temple. And all these terrible things are happening. But, appropriately sandwiched between them, timeline-wise, is the story of Ruth. And then even while all these terrible things are happening, and these statements are said that there's no one who serves the Lord or loves him or does what's right, we actually know that that's hyperbole. Because there's this woman named Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi, who do serve the Lord and do love him and bring about the lineage of Christ.
One other
love it.
When the nation of Israel was separate and to be to themselves, and what we see here is that people want to be like foreign people. It's popular to be worship the Baals and ask for alms.
Well, look at the consequences.
Yeah. But the point is that we need to be separate in our lives. We need to keep the world out and keep God in. And that's what they didn't do. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you very much and your grace tonight. Thank you.